Into hour number two. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We were supposed to have back-to-back interviews in hour number one, but now they both moved to hour number three. So we found Derek Brown and Jordan Palmer both. We will have Derek Brown, an NFL draft prospect, at 20 past the third hour. Jordan Palmer, QB consultant and a seven-year NFL vet, will close out the show in hour three. Boxing and MMA reporter Kevin Ioli for Yahoo joins me next segment. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. So we have open phones right now. The third hour is going to be a tough hour for you to get through. The Kobe Bryant Memorial is taking place at Staples in Los Angeles. And that's going on as we speak. Really quickly, let's go to Twitter. Austin in Omaha tweets, Wilder only gets 40% of the cut for the next fight. Who the hell would purposely lose to get less money in the rematch? Chris in KC tweets, nice work by Deontay Wilder's mom to disguise her voice as Bob in Jacksonville.
Flabbergasted.
Slabbergasted. This guy called him and said he was, quote, slabbergasted.
I am actually flabbergasted.
All you had to do was say, I am actually plastered, and hang up the phone. And then we would have been fine. Rome, what's the deal with old cranks? Right, Alvy. I can't both engineer and host the show at the same time, Alvy. Rome, what's the deal with old cranks named Bob calling the show? Quote, slabbergasted. Quote, run his ass down. Remembering Max Bear fights from the 1930s, invite these two old kooks to a smack off so they can make fools of themselves for our entertainment.
Run his ass down.
Flabbergasted.
Run his ass down.
Flabbergasted.
Run his ass down.
Flabbergasted.
These are two different guys.
Run his ass down.
Flabbergasted.
Run his ass down.
Both named Bob.
Flabbergasted.
Run his ass down.
Each representing their own coast.
Run his ass down.
And both coming out like old guys and running that mess. Bob in L.A. talking about running LeBron's ass down.
Run his ass down.
And then Bob from Jacksonville is saying that he is slabbergasted.
Flabbergasted.
That nobody, myself included, knew that fight was, quote, fixed. You know why nobody knew that, Bob? It's because it wasn't. Hey, Rome, before you cut me off, I was about to explain my theory that Neil Armstrong really walked on a movie set in Arizona and not the moon. Signed, Bob in Pensacola. Brian in Charlotte. All right, so I want to be sure that I've got this right. Was it Jacksonville or Pensacola or Tampa? This guy made a legendary phone call. I want to make sure I've got the right guy. Jacksonville.
Flabbergaster.
Hey, Jim, why did you run that dude? I was looking forward to hearing about our flat earth. Dave in Chicago. Romy. Okay. The April 11th, April Fool's Day joke was a good one, but come on, man. When are you actually going to announce the tour stop? There's no way you're going to Buffalo to hang out with all those plumbers, welders, and garbage technicians driving old, drinking Old English 800 and King Cobra malt liquor. We've got the red carpet all ready to roll out down here in the Sunshine State. Just say when and where so we can have the Henny on ice for you. Signed, Scott in Tampa. Palm trees, beaches, 80 degrees, and hot babes in bikinis. Scotty, I appreciate it. Except I live in Southern California. I've got all that already. I want to go someplace different. I want to do something different. We're going to Buffalo. That was not a joke. That was not a troll. That was not a prank. That was not a hoax. I am really coming back to Buffalo. It's April 11th. Go to JimRomeWorldTour.com. Make sure you have the password. Without the password, you cannot buy tickets until Friday. If you're ready to pull the trigger right now, the password is jungle. Jungle. All right, really quickly. As good a night as that was for Tyson Fury, it was that tough of a night for Deontay Wilder. Absolutely nothing worked for him on Saturday night because he got worked. That was about as one-sided a rematch of a draw as you could possibly imagine. He was really never in that fight. Fury stepped to him, controlled the space, controlled the ring, closed him down, never gave him a chance to get into that fight. Never really even gave him a chance to get his feet or legs underneath him. And he was not afraid to use the 273 pounds in the clinch and make Deontay hold him up. Fury was not just a better boxer Saturday night. He was the better and more powerful puncher. It was clear from the very jump, and it only got worse for Deontay as the fight went on. After the fight, Wilder made reference to the fact that he had, quote, a lot of things going on heading into this fight, end quote. And he said it more than once. I'm not sure what he meant by that, but I'm also pretty certain that whatever it was, it didn't matter. He was not going to beat that version. Not that version of Fury on that night, period. Because again, Fury never let Deontay get into a rhythm. Never got the space or the looks he wanted. And he just stayed after Wilder from bell to bell. He put so much pressure on him. He took away his legs and then he sapped him of his superhuman strength. Wilder looked like he was in deep from the second round on. And from the time Wilder went down in the third, it had that feeling of a night where Wilder's only chance was to land that miracle shot, a shot that simply was not coming. By the fifth, he was in real danger, not of just losing the fight, that was already a given, but he was in real danger of being in real danger, of possibly being seriously hurt. At that point, Fury is just, or I should say Deontay is just taking unnecessary punishment. Because he's unable to defend himself, and he's incapable of landing any significant shots. And that continued on into the seventh, when Fury continued to do damage, and Wilder could not get off the ropes.
Wilder just coasting back into that neutral corner, and now Fury's looking to split the guard, as Wilder's in bad shape. This the fight is over! Deontay Wilder's corner was throwing in the towel. The ref stepped in. He is battered. He is bloody. And that's the baddest man.
And that's when assistant trainer and former fighter Mark Breland threw in the towel. And as you might surmise, Deontay was not happy about that at all.
Things like this happen. The best man won tonight, but my coach, my side threw in the towel. And you know, I'm ready to go out on my shield, man.
I get it. I understand why he'd be angry about that. I understand why he'd be upset about that. A lot of fighters, especially fighters with that kind of heart, would be pissed in that situation. Deontay is extremely proud. It's a courageous guy. He didn't want somebody to end that fight for him. He didn't want to go out like that. He wanted to go out like a warrior. And by the way, he's still a warrior. 100%. Except in that case, going out like a warrior could have a terrible impact on your career, and more importantly, on your entire life. Going out on your shield is a figure of speech, but if that had gone on any longer, he might have gone out on a stretcher, or even worse, in a pine box, because that's the kind of beating that he was taking. But Wilder was not the only guy in his own camp who was angry about that. His head trainer, Jay Deese, was as well. And he wanted everybody to know that it was Mark Breland who threw in the towel and not he himself.
Mark threw the towel. I didn't think he should have. Deontay's the kind of guy that's a go out on his shield kind of guy, and he would tell you straight up, don't throw the towel in. In fact, in the dressing room when Tyson was getting his hands wrapped, in one of the earlier fights, which they show on the screen in the locker room, they had a guy that got stopped. We were like, stop the fight, stop the fight. And right when the ref stopped the fight, the towel came in, and Tyson looked at his people and said, never, like that. And I said, yeah, that's the same kind of guy Deontay is. He does not want that. And then you've always got to consider also that Deontay is a fearsome puncher. So that's always a difficult thing because, you know, he does always have that shot to land a big shot and turn things around. So that's what happened there. But Deontay is doing well, and you know, he'll be back. He'll be all the better for it.
Quote, he'll be all the better for it. Yeah, if he is, let's be clear about this. If he is all the better for it, it's because Breland threw in the towel. Not in spite of that. D said that Wilder could have turned that fight around. Look, I understand that your head trainer is going to have that kind of confidence in you, that faith in you. I get that. I understand it. I respect it. But you know what I respect even more? Breland for throwing in the towel. Because it's not just about having blind faith in your fighter. It's about caring for your fighter as well and making sure that he is there for the next fight. Of course, Deontay Wilder wanted to continue. Almost every fighter does. That's why it's up to the corner and the ref to protect the fighter from himself, to protect the fighter when he's no longer capable of protecting himself. Protect the fighter when he's not capable of defending himself. Because at that point, Deontay Wilder wasn't. And he was taking hellish punishment that could have had long-term detrimental effects in a fight that at that point he had absolutely no shot of winning. No, I'm not a doctor, but no, I don't need to be one to know that. And had Breland not acted the way he did, when he did, Wilder may have ended up losing a hell of a lot more than that belt. And back to the other argument that Deese made. Save this argument that Wilder can end any fight at any time with that right hand, so you got to let him try. On most nights, yes, but not on that night. Not this past Saturday night. That was not his fight. He was not the better fighter. And deep down, he knew it. Fury knew it. Pretty much everybody knew it, except for Jacksonville Bob, who's slabbergastered.
Flabbergastered.
The point I'm trying to make is this. I'm as intoxicated by that right hand as anybody. That Hail Mary shot, though, that home run shot, was not coming on that night. He didn't have the power necessary to throw it. He didn't have the energy or the legs to load and land it. And whatever he did have left, even if he could land it, was not moving a 273-pound Fury off his spot. By the seventh round, even standing up was a major accomplishment for Deontay. Most people, even most fighters, would have been done by then. Problem is, at that point, Deontay was not really a threat to anybody other than himself. Breland knew it. He's a former fighter. He's in that corner. He was watching the whole thing. He knew it. The ref knew it. The entire world knew it. Breland was not throwing in the towel to quit. Throwing in the towel was not quitting. It was being realistic. It was being smart. It was being compassionate. Hell, it was being courageous. That took guts. It would have been reckless for Breland and the rest of that corner to sit there and do nothing and just say that Deontay didn't want it like that. Deontay always had that puncher's chance. Man, what if something seriously, seriously bad had happened to him in that fight? And that was your explanation. Well, he didn't want to stop. You got to protect the guy from the guy sometimes. It is the corner's job to protect him when he can't protect himself. That's exactly what Breland did. He should be praised for it and not hammered for it. I understand that Wilder might be pissed, but that was the right call. Breland was the one who made it. Better to have wounded pride than a damaged brain. Instead of cracking him, we should be thanking him. And I think in time, Wilder will. I think Deontay will. I think Deontay will know in time, if he doesn't already, that that absolutely was the right call. It was the right call. The better man not only was winning the fight, he was dominating the fight and doing serious damage. All right, when we come back, Kevin Ioli will share his thoughts. Derek Brown, next hour. Jordan Palmer, next hour. My thoughts on the Lakers and Celtics coming up. Working out is hard. It's always been hard. But Bombas can make even the toughest workouts a lot more comfortable. Bombas Performance Socks are designed for everything from running to hiking to cycling and more. They're made with a lightweight polycotton blend, which means no matter how hard you're working, your feet will stay cool, dry, and comfortable. Never sweaty. Bombases are built with a special arch support system that's supportive, but not too tight. And their left-right contouring and Y-stitched heel keep your socks perfectly in place. And you know that annoying toe seam that most socks have? Bombas got rid of it. Did you know that socks are the number one most requested item in homeless shelters? Bombas socks are created to change that, because for every single pair you buy, Bombas donates a pair to somebody in need. So you want to go to bombas.com/gymrome. Get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/gymrome. Get 20% off. Once again, bombas.com/gymrome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Spent a lot of time talking about the fight Saturday night in Vegas. What a crazy night that was. Unbelievable and astonishing performance by Tyson Fury. Joining us now is somebody who was right there to take it all in. He covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. He is a good friend of the program. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I am awesome, Jim. How are you doing today?
Great. Super, Kevin. Great to have you. Thanks so much for doing it. You know, if you and I were to go back to the build-up to the fight, in fact, you and I spoke before it, but when you looked at that first meeting, Kevin, what kind of a fight were you expecting to see Saturday night?
You know, a carbon copy of that with maybe a few small changes. You know, I did not think Fury was serious when he said he was going to go forward and back Wilder up. Now, that made a lot of sense, and I talked about that and I wrote about that last week, that the way you neutralize power is one of two things. You either box and move, which is what he did the first time, and create angles and that type of thing, or you try to back somebody up. And because boxers or power punchers are not able, Jim, to really do well when they're backing up. They're so used to being the person moving forward, trying to corner somebody, and then firing away. When they're forced to back up, they tend to not be as effective. So the strategy, that strategy made sense, but it was also risky because you're walking right into the guy's power. And so I know Fury said he was going to do that, and the hiring of Javon Sugarhill Stewart kind of suggested that might be the case. But I thought, you know what, he's going to do it a little bit, but more he's going to do the moving and create angles because he's such a good boxer. But he executed that plan as well as I've ever seen a boxer in a big fight execute a game plan. It was magnificent.
It was magnificent is right. I want to go back to that point in a minute, Kevin. I have to admit myself, when he said that, I thought he was just doing what he does, you know, running off at the mouth, trying to sell some pay-per-views, trying to sell some tickets, maybe even trying to convince himself of something. But as you point out, Kevin, and I was talking about this before he came on, he knew exactly what he was doing. And it's one thing to think it, but quite another to go out there and execute it. Let me ask you this. What was the mood like in the arena when he came out sitting on the throne, wearing a crown and singing Crazy?
It was epic. I mean, the place went nuts. There was a lot of intensity. They had done Sweet Caroline before, and all the Fury fans sang it. And so the promoters did a wonderful job with the way they presented the show. I mean, the arena looked great. The fans were totally into it. And that entrance by Fury was spectacular. Wilder had a good entrance, too. But I heard that Wilder had an entrance that he wanted to do that was going to cost a lot of money, and it ended up getting vetoed. They thought it cost too much money. I didn't get details on what it was other than it was pretty over the top. Wilder's was good, but Fury's was just absolutely epic.
Kevin Ioli is joining us. Kevin, back to the point about how Fury could have gone in there. He's the better boxer. We know this. What's it say about him then that he could have just done what he'd done in the first fight, maybe had a better result because he would have been in better shape, but instead he did change trainers. He completely reworked his strategy, and he came back with a performance like that. What's that tell you about Fury?
That is what I wrote my post-fight column about, and I said, I looked at Anthony Joshua, the other guy that has heavyweight title belts, and I said, this is why you want to watch Tyson Fury more than you want to watch Anthony Joshua. And Joshua is a great talent, no doubt about it, but when Joshua was in a similar situation coming back to fight Andy Ruiz, what did he do? He fought cautious, he fought tentative, he didn't, you know, and forget, you know, this is just personality difference, but he didn't do a great job, you know, promoting the fight. Fury did that. Fury said, you know what, I'm going to take a risk, and I might get knocked out by taking this risk, but I'm going to give the fans a show. I'm going to win definitively. I'm going to show that I believe in my skills. Joshua was afraid of Andy Ruiz. There's no question about it. An out-of-shape guy who was 20 or 30 pounds overweight. I think that that shows the difference between those two guys. Fury believes in his talent, believes in his ability, and knows, you know what, I am good enough to make this work. Joshua kind of doesn't have that same confidence in himself. And I'll tell you, if you only had money to buy a ticket to see one of the two of them, there's no question right now who the majority of people would rather watch.
No doubt. Kevin Ioli is my guest. Kevin, how do you explain a 6'9", 273-pound man moving the way Fury moves?
He is a rare athlete, but, you know, he comes from a fighting family, and he started young, and I think that's part of it. It's kind of like Floyd Mayweather. You know, Floyd Mayweather was 18 years old, and he had gloves on his hand. He was in the ring for the first time at 3, and I think that's a similar thing with Tyson Fury. His father was a fighter. Other people throughout his lineage had fought over the years, and he just grew up with boxing, and, you know, when you learn that early, that footwork, those movements, even when you become so big and so overwhelming where you think that he would be bumbling and stumbling around the ring, you're able to make those movements, and he understands boxing at such a high level, and he looks at it differently than anybody else. It's almost, to me, the comparison I would make, Jim, is the way Wayne Gretzky used to see the plays happening on the ice when he was in hockey. It was almost like Gretzky was watching from the press box, seeing people move, and I think Fury has that kind of sense of movement in the ring. He understands, if I do this, he's going to do that, and that's going to be the result. It's just brilliant, and I think it comes from a lifetime of being involved in the sport.
Really interesting. Like, Gretzky knew where the puck was going to be before it went there, so maybe Fury sees things before they happen. But let me ask you this. You can explain that like that, but how do you explain this? It was not that long ago, and you've written on this, that Fury was 400 pounds. He was abusing drugs and alcohol, battling depression. He had suicidal thoughts. How do you explain this dramatic a turnaround and this quickly?
It's almost impossible. I mean, that is so remarkable, and I think it's just a testament to the person that he is, and I think it should be a symbol to people who are suffering. I mean, hey, I think one of the reasons this fight caught on, hey, there are two great fighters who had contrasting styles and were exciting fighters. That's the main reason. But you know what? They also related to people on a human level, because both of them, I put a story out. I interviewed Deontay Wilder last month, and he admitted he had a gun in his hand, was thinking of committing suicide when he was 19 years old. Tyson Fury, you know, not only did he have suicidal thoughts, Jim, he was in a sports car going 150 kilometers an hour thinking of driving into the side of a bridge. So he actually was taking action, and then he said a voice spoke to him and said, don't do this. And so he put on the brakes and managed not to wreck his car and survive, and he sought help. And the fact that he got help from mental health professionals also is so good for other people, because it shows, you know what, there's help out there. Even when it seems like it's the worst, there's help out there. But it's a remarkable story that he's done, and I have no doubt that there will be books and movies written about this long into the future.
No doubt. Kevin Ioli, my guest. Kevin, what was your reaction when Jay Deese let the world know that Mark Breland was the guy who threw in the towel?
Well, I had two reactions. Number one, I was stunned that he would throw his longtime partner under the bus like that. And number two, I thought it was classless. Mark Breland absolutely made the right call. When you're hired as a fighter's trainer, these guys are warriors. They don't want to quit. They're going to keep going. They always believe in their ability. They hire you as the trainer to protect them. They need you to make the call that they don't want to make. And Deontay Wilder had no chance to win that fight at that point. And I think from the fifth round on, Jim, his legs were gone. You know, so if you don't have your legs as a boxer, you're not going to win. And he didn't have the power that he originally came into the ring with. And I think the fact that JD would throw Mark Breland under the bus like that was reprehensible. And I think he did it because he was just trying to kiss up to Deontay, because Deontay has the attitude, hey, I don't want you to stop my fights. But that's the trainer's job. I see my guy getting beaten on. He's taking right hands. He's taking left hooks. He cannot defend himself. He's going to have head trauma if this fight goes anymore. Mark Breland did 100% the right thing, and JD should be ashamed of himself.
Kevin Ioli with some strong comments. I agree. Mark Breland, first of all, if anybody would know, it's Mark Breland. He's been in that spot before. And number two, it's not a matter, Kevin, of him quitting. The guy showed compassion. He was looking out for his fighter. And to me, that was actually a courageous thing to do, because he had to know he was going to take heat, and he has.
Right.
So what do you make of now Deontay Wilder? You never really know how a fighter is going to respond to their first loss. So if you had to guess, how do you think Deontay responds to this?
I think Deontay is a winner, and I think Deontay is a true professional, and I think he'll come back strong. I think if his team does him a favor. They would advise him to turn down the rematch. He will get another rematch, fight with Tyson Fury. There's no doubt. But this immediate rematch, I think, would be a mistake. I think what he needs to do, Jim, is take, you know, 6 months off, no boxing, no promoting, just go out and relax and let his body heal, let his mind heal, and then get back into the gym. And I think that'll do a couple things. That'll open the way for potentially a Fury Joshua fight, which would then create an undisputed champion. And then number two, it would allow Wilder to kind of, you know, work on some things that he needs to work on and just get his body back to full health. Fighters often after a fight like that are never the same, and it's usually because they get back into the gym and they get back into the ring too quickly. If you let yourself heal, you'll be fine. That would be my advice to him. You know what? Don't rush back into this. You'll get him next year. You'll get him down the line, but right now the most important thing is your health.
Kevin Iole, my guest. So final thought, you shared your concerns about Joshua, but what about a potential Fury-Joshua fight? Just how big would that be?
I think you would be talking, if they put that in Las Vegas, and I think at Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders are going to play, you know, you're going to talk about 70,000 people being there, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 Brits would come over. I think that they could have a record gate at that stadium, or if not, certainly close to it. Mayweather-Pacquiao in 2015 had a $72 million gate, and I think that that would be certainly be threatened, if not broken. And from a pay-per-view standpoint, I think it would be massive. It would be a huge event around the world, and I think it's the absolute fight to make. It would be the Ali Frazier of this generation.
But Kevin, don't you wonder about Joshua though? Like Fury, it's very clear that he loved the big stage. He's comfortable on the big stage. How do you think Joshua would deal with that promotion and the build up and the lead up to like the biggest thing ever?
You know, that's not his thing. Like, Fury's comfortable in front of the camera, and Joshua is not. But I also think what's happened is his team has done him a disservice. They haven't put, I mean, he is a bright guy, and he has a lot to say. He's just not a comedian like Tyson Fury is. But he has a lot to offer, but I think his team just, you know, they protect him, and it's almost like, you know, they're afraid of losing their gigs, and so, you know, he doesn't like to do promotion, so they don't put him, force him to do it. But I think what needs to happen with some of these people is say, hey, you know what, it's only going to be in your best interest, and you're a smart guy who has a good story to tell. Let's set it up for you. I don't know that against Tyson Fury you're going to win the battle of words with him, but I think he could present himself in a very positive way. He's beloved by the Brits, but not so much by anybody else. And I think if the people got a chance to know the real Anthony Joshua and he would show that side of himself, you know, that would just help his brand going forward, not only in the UK, but in the US and around the world.
Kevin, to me, it's kind of like fighting Conor McGregor. You're not going to win the presser. You're not going to win the run-up to the fight. You're not going to win the promotional aspect
right.
of it, but you might win in the cage. You might win in the ring.
That's what you got to try to do, and you know, present yourself in a good way. That's what you have to do, and I think Anthony could do that. But my guess would be, you know what, he's going to just say, let Tyson do all the interviews, and I'm going to worry about training, and I don't think he'll put his best foot forward.
Kevin Iole covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports, and again, a good friend of the program. Kevin, thank you very much for that hit, and for all of them, it's good to have you back.
Anytime, Jim. Appreciate you having me. Thanks.
Great to have you, Kevin. Thank you. Well done. All right, so we've broken down that fight from every single angle. If you want to jump up in here, you want to do it right now because I've got two interviews coming up next hour. I've got Derek Brown at 20 past. I've got Jordan Palmer at 40 past. And our lines are wide open, 1-800-636-8686. The Kobe Memorial is taking place right now at Staples. In the meantime, I want to talk about the game yesterday, Lakers and Celtics. And I'll do that when we come back. Phone lines are open at 1-800-636-8686. Time now for a bottom of the hour sports update. Here is the very latest on this Monday. Here is Rich Ackerman.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Tomorrow night at 11 Eastern, Mountain West regular season champ San Diego State take on Colorado State on CBS Sports Network. Also, you want to remember to thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. We are close. We are convenient. We are known for our guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from professional parts people that you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. I don't know if you've heard, but The Jim Rome World Tour is coming back. It is April 11th. It is in Buffalo. If you want tickets, go to JimRomeWorldTour.com. JimRomeWorldTour.com. Tickets go on sale to the general public next Friday. Is it Shays, which is a beautiful venue. The tickets go on sale to the general public next Friday, but you can buy yours right now if you're listening. If you use the password Jungle, VIP packages are still on sale. JimRomeWorldTour.com, password Jungle. All right, phone number is 1-800-636-8686. I've got an NFL draft prospect, really good player, Derek Brown, next hour. Jordan Palmer is a quarterback consultant and is once again working with some of the best coming out. That's also coming up in hour number three. You know, it's a really surreal day here in Southern California when the Lakers beat the Celtics by two in an enormous regular season game, and it's virtually an afterthought because of the celebration of the lives of Kobe and Gianna right now. The memorial is taking place at Staples as we speak. And that was even on everybody's mind yesterday. Bill Russell, for instance, showed up at Staples in a Kobe jersey, which was awesome and sad and everything in between. Celtics-Lakers yesterday was amazing. I mean, they aren't the two best teams in the NBA right now, I understand that, but the game itself was incredible. The Bucks are 9 games ahead of Boston in the East. The Raptors would like a word as well. It's late February. We have a long way to go to get to June. But that didn't feel like Lakers-Celtics yesterday. It didn't just feel like that. It felt like a Lakers-Celtics finals game. Like, rivalries are pretty much dead in pro sports, but that felt like a rivalry game. It felt like one taking place in the postseason, not in the regular season, and not just after the All-Star break. Again, in the East, the Bucks are lapping everybody. They're that good. They're so good that it's easy to forget about them already, but I would not blame anybody who saw that game yesterday and wanted more of that. Like, 7 more of that. If you saw that and said that you didn't want to see that again, you're a liar.
You're a liar.
Doesn't make you a felon.
You are a felon.
Not that, but it makes you a liar. I know I'd like to see it. Sign me up for that. Nothing against Milwaukee. But you had two teams trading shots until the very last minute. Regular season games like that rarely live up to the hype, but that one did somehow. LeBron said it best.
Just in the simple fact, just two teams that has aspirations of holding a trophy up at the end of the season. So, you know, we knew what we were getting ourselves into. They knew what they were getting ourselves into, and it was a great game.
Right. And the fact that both teams are in this position at this point is pretty amazing in and of itself. When you consider where they were last year, the Celtics were ripping apart. The Kyrie Irving experiment was failing. Their young players appear to be stagnating. And a season that had so much promise was a total disaster. But as bad as they were still in a much better spot than the Lakers because L.A. was going through its 6th straight season without the postseason. LeBron was injured. They had a roster that did not work. The pieces didn't fit. They didn't pull off the Anthony Davis trade. I mean, it was bad. How bad? There was actually a legitimate question as to who was worse, the Knicks or the Lakers? A legitimate question. Not some made-for-TV hot debate. A legitimate question. And not an easy one to answer either. And we were still a few weeks away from Magic quitting to spend more time on Twitter. And now look at the Lakers. Now they're back. LeBron's healthy. And not only that, but playing at an MVP level. LeBron looks about as good as he's ever looked. And they have Anthony Davis. And they have a roster where the pieces do fit. A roster that does work. And they've got a coaching staff that's making all the right moves. Remember all that talk about how when they hired Frank Vogel and they brought in Jason Kidd, it was just a matter of time before Jason Kidd took over? That's not happening either. Nobody's talking about that because that coaching staff is making all the right moves. And now they've got a really nice win over the Celtics. Because that Boston team came to play yesterday, even without Kemba Walker. And if you had any doubts about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown last season, consider those doubts completely erased. I mean, yes, Tatum, he's got that massive back tat with the slight grammatical error. You can laugh at that guy all you want for that. Except that same guy, while grammatically unsound, just dropped 41 on the Lakers on national TV and was doing things like this.
Tatum using that screen again by Tice. Shoots over Davis. Knocks another 3-pound on Jason Tatum.
He was doing that, and he was doing this.
Jaylen Brown on LeBron James. Pass stolen by Marcus Smart. Ahead to Tatum. One man to beat. Oh, and he throws it down.
And he did this, too.
Lakers briefly had 11-point advantage very early in the game. Tatum spins, gets away, layup is good. Ties his career high with 41 and ties the game.
As LeBron posted on Instagram after that game, Tatum is, quote, an absolute problem, end quote. Strong praise from LeBron. And LeBron's right. Tatum is an absolute problem. His teammate Jaylen Brown put it another way.
Tatum has reached a new height, man. Superstar 11. We all got to continue to improve and go with him. Like, the way he's playing is unreal. We got to continue to find ways to allow him to reach his potential. He's been playing unreal, man. It was a joy to watch him tonight.
That's Brown. And it's not like Brown is some kind of hack either. He had 20, 6 boards, and 3 steals. But as good as they were, they still were not good enough. Not when Anthony Davis... Hey, AD, what's good? Not with Anthony Davis is going 32-13.
AD, what's good, baby?
Even in a less than stellar performance. Not when Dwight Howard is giving you 10-7 in 15 minutes off the bench, like he seems to do every single night. And not when LeBron is going 29 points, 9 assists, 8 boards, and the game winner.
He throws it into LeBron on the right side. LeBron one-on-one against Jaylen Brown. Lakers trail by 1. LeBron back and Brown in. 15-foot follow-away. Good! Huge shot by LeBron.
And that's a little dream shake for you, if you need it. It's one LeBron had been planning on using on Jaylen Brown. He had been setting it up all game long.
You know, I've been setting him up all night with the back down to the drop step to the baseline. So I figured he would sit on it, thinking that I would try it again. So went to my back down and gave a little dream shake to the baseline and was able to open up middle and get my fadeaway.
Perfectly planned, perfectly executed, and yes, the Lakers-Celtics rivalry appears back. And while Milwaukee's going to have something to say about it, I would happily take 7 more games like that one that I just saw come June. Although Milwaukee will have something to say about that, and Toronto might as well. LeBron probably celebrated that dream shake with a salted caramel shake after the game, knowing his nutritional regimen the way we do. Allegedly. You know, you've got Taco Tuesday. More importantly, Milkshake Monday.
It's Tuesday somewhere.
It's Monday somewhere. It's 12 noon somewhere. Milkshake Monday.
It's Tuesday somewhere.
Man, it must be great to be LeBron. I mean, he's earned everything with his grind, his grit, his desire, his work ethic. But it must be great to be this guy, knowing that every Tuesday is Taco Tuesday. And every Monday is Milkshake Monday.
It's Tuesday somewhere.
It's Monday somewhere, and you can still look like that. Hey, Rome. This is an email. Hey, Rome. We think that the Lakers-Celtics game was very captivating. Enjoyed seeing Kareem dish it to Magic, over to AC, back to Worthy, then to Magic, again for the dunk. Gail Goodrich must have been out on injured reserve. Bird's 3 at the buzzer before half was epic. Regards, the Bobs.
Flabbergasted.
Run his ass down.
Flabbergasted.
Run his ass down.
Eric in Colorado. Dude, keep Gail Goodrich's name out your mouth. And if you're going to email about him, at least spell his name correctly. It's my guy, Gail Goodrich.
Keep my name out your mouth.
That's my guy, Gail Goodrich. One of my three childhood heroes. My three sports idols growing up. Gail Goodrich, Terry Bradshaw, and the Penguin, Ron Say. Hey, Rome, Patrick Reed is one of the biggest bags in athletics, but I am slabbergasted at what he did to me and the vast majority of golf fans on Sunday. I'll never be able to forget it, and it's inexcusable that it's not being talked about. For him to have made me and many others cheer for Bryson DeChambeau makes me ill and proves what a horrible person he really is. Thanks, Rick in Calgary. All right, Rick, I'll talk about it. I'll talk about it when we come back. My thoughts on what Patrick Reed did next.